Welcome back to Word and Table, a weekly podcast on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship and why it is vital in our world today. I'm your host, Alex Wilgus, and I am here, as always, with Father Stephen Gauthier. Welcome back, Father Stephen.
Great to be back, Father Alex.
Father Stephen is the canon theologian of the Diocese of the Upper Midwest in the Anglican Church in North America, and he is director of formation at St. Paul's House of Formation in the Greenhouse Movement, and I am rector at Redemption Church in Frisco, Texas. Father Stephen, let's get biblical with this episode and talk about how there's a whole lot of different words for laws in the Old Testament. You know, the Old Testament, the law, is really, really important, you know, especially for Jews, because it's where we get God's laws. But there's a whole lot of words that are used to reflect that. So, like, for instance, Leviticus 25:18, therefore you shall do my statutes and keep my rules and perform them. So we got statutes and we've got rules. And in other places, we've got ordinances, we've got judgments, we've got commandments. At least in English, there seems to be a whole lot of these different words that we use to refer to basically, I guess, just things that you need to do because God told you to, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So my question is there any real difference between all of these words, and why do how do we translate them, and why do we use them in certain situations and not others?
Well, that's a really good point. Because this is law, and if you spend any time around lawyers, you'd realize that terms have meanings. Yeah. So what we have is we do have eight different terms that are commonly used, like laws, commandments, decrees, statutes, ordinances, testimonies, judgments, rules. Okay, so we have a lot of different things, and there is a different meaning. However, what can be a little challenging is that in English, people in different translations use different English legal terms to refer to the same Hebrew word. So I think the best way to look at it is there are five basic words as we look upon it, like in Talmud. There are five basic words that describe, that are used in Hebrew. And they have meanings. The first one is, we have the English word Torah. In the plural, it's Torot, you know, Torah. You know, we talk about the Torah, the law. We have something called a mitzvah. Mitzvot in the plural, that's a commandment, okay? Everyone agrees those are the three. Torah is always translated law in every translation. Mitzvah is always translated as a commandment. Okay. Then we get to things where we have more variance in how they translate them in English. Chok, chukim in the plural, that's like C-H-O-K is how they spell it in English, transliteration, is, we're going to call it an ordinance. Okay, that's the most, but it's sometimes translated as statute or decree, but the Hebrew term is chok, and that means ordinance. Then we have another word called edot in the plural, and that's testimony. Sometimes people call it a decree. Then we have something called a mishpat, which is a mishpatim, and that's a judgment or a rule. So let's start right. We have law, Torah. We have commandments, mitzvah. We have ordinance, which is a chok. We have a testimony, which is edah, and we have a judgment or a rule, a mishpat. So we can look at, those are the five basic categories.
Okay, so five Hebrew words that are translated in various ways into English to mean these things. But you're saying that Torah and mitzvah are pretty much, Torah is almost always translated law, and mitzvah is commandment in English?
Right.
Okay.
But beyond that, we have all sorts of different ways. People choose different terms.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what the Jewish terms actually mean. What is the understanding here?
Well, with Torah, meaning law, it's the generic term. You can never go wrong with it. It can mean either laws, individual laws, or it can mean the law. You know, law is a principle. You know, law, like God's law. It's sort of interesting that way that we had, for example, it's used in the plural in Hebrew, in Genesis. Where it says to Abraham, instead of Abraham, Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And the word translated laws there is Torah, plural. So anytime we use the word law, it can either mean the law as a whole, that's singular, Torah, or it can mean individual laws. Okay, so it's most often used in the singular, meaning to the law. Mm-hmm. Lord, I love your law. That's the term we always use when we talk about God's law. But then we have, within that, we have specific, the law is made up individual laws, we might say, right? Those are the commandments. Mitzvah is a commandment. Okay, so there could be, but mitzvah is basically, we look upon God's law as the Torah. And in the Torah, we have 613 commandments, which are called the mitzvot, the 613 commandments of the Torah, of the law. There are 613 commandments within the law. It's interesting. I love the term mitzvah, because those 613 commandments, it's considered a real privilege among Orthodox Jews to perform a commandment. It's not a burden. It's a privilege. And so people will encourage you, hey, that's a mitzvah. It's like a special chance to, a gift God gives you to do the right thing.
Oh, okay.
So that's a mitzvah. You know, I remember once being in a delicatessen in Manhattan. And what they did, it wasn't completely legal. So you'd have these sandwiches, no one could eat in things. And when you have something clear, they keep it on separate. If you couldn't finish the whole thing, you didn't want to take it back to the hotel, they said, look, we have a deal here. You know, they're homeless people. And you haven't touched any of this. You know, here we've kept it separate here. We can put that out there. We can't do it officially and things. You know, it's a mitzvah. And I think remember everyone what a mitzvah is. It's a mitzvah. You know, we're feeding the poor.
So it's an opportunity for you to fulfill one of the commandments. It's not just the commandment itself, but it's the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there are 613. By the way, this is interesting. Amaze your friends. How, in those commandments, you know, sometimes God says don't do something and sometimes God says do something. And so we distinguish, it's a joke, when you study the Jewish law, it's a joke that there are 365 negative commandments, things not to do, or the joke goes, something not to do every day of the year. Okay, there's something not to do every day of the year, 365, and the balance, 248, is the positive commandments, things you need to do.
Okay, got it. So that's mitzvah, commandment.
Right. Then there are three different classes of commandments. So of those, you know, so we could put each of those 613, they can be subcategorized into one of three categories. This is the traditional Jewish understanding in Talmud. Okay, the first one is an ordinance. The chokh is an ordinance. And that's used to describe, as the rabbis see it, commandments that God, that we obey because God, we can't make human sense out of them. God simply tells us to do them and that's good enough. You know, we do. A classic example that the rabbis use is the law of the red heifer. You know, and number, it's a really mysterious. In Numbers 19, you sacrifice this red heifer, you take the ashes and you make water with it, you know, used for purification. We're given no explanation why a heifer or anything else. It's just, here's what I want you to do. And so they give an example if we do it because God told us to do it. But it transcends reason. There's no, we could not come up with any explanation of that per se. We simply do it because God tells us to do it.
Okay, I see.
The plural is chukim. So you know, so those are, that's an ordinance, a command that transcends reason. The edda, a testimony, is saying, you know, it's not natural law or something. It's unique to us as Jews. They, you know, would say, but you know, it does make sense. For example, when God told us different things to do to celebrate the Passover. Or tell us, you know, here's things not to do on the Sabbath or things to do on the Sabbath. He's saying those are things, we would never have come up with those by natural human reason. But when God tells it, well, it makes sense to have a day of rest. That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
You know, we can see what God, it's perfect why God would want us to do concrete things. You know, the sacrament, the idea of, you know, the matter matters. They said that makes perfect sense. So that's a testimony. It's something God told us to do it, and we wouldn't have come up with it in ourselves. However, it makes sense. We can see why.
So you're saying that that's kind of different than the hawk, right? Which doesn't really seem to make much sense to us at all.
It's like, I mean, even after you hear what it is saying, why a red heifer? Why these things? And saying, well, we don't know, and we can come up with symbolic things, but we know this is an example of God's sovereignty. You know, somehow God has chosen. That's a way we can show that we can really obey in the sense our obedience is not dependent on complete knowledge.
But the testimony is sort of, the Eda, right, is like something that human beings wouldn't have come up with on our own. But now that we do it, there's a certain kind of reason to it.
We could see the other reason.
Yeah.
You know, why we do certain things in sacrifices, the symbolism of things. Again, it's the classic things we in the Talmud they talk about is things like, you know, Passover celebration.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Sabbath observance. You know, God told us to do this thing. It makes, what a beautiful way to remember the Passover.
I guess you could, in our Christian context, you could liken that, you know, to, you know, bread and wine at the Eucharist, right? Like we would never,
very good point.
We would never have thought that up on our own, but now that we do, it makes sense. God has this special relationship with life as bread and things like that, so we can see how it makes sense, even though we might not have deduced it on our own.
Exactly. Then we have a mishpat, and this is really as Jews would never use this term, of course. It's natural law. We're basically saying there are some things that inherently make sense for anybody anywhere. You don't have to be a Jew. This is part of being a human being. Classic examples: you don't steal, you don't kill.
Yeah.
You know, those are make sense for any society. That's basic moral law. It's sometimes call it the covenant with Noah. You know, basic morality that applies to everyone, Jew and Gentile alike. The Noahic covenant, the Noahide covenant, the Noahide laws. So the idea there is that's a judgment or a rule, a mishpat, mishpatim in the plural. And it simply means that, hey, these are things that we're told specifically in the law, and the Bible tells us these things, but they are clear reflections of underlying, they're binding in everyone. For example, we as Christians say, well, what are the parts of the law that specifically applies to Christians? If you look in the 39 articles, and we say we separate the moral laws, right, that, you know, the Christians follow, versus the ceremonial laws versus the civil laws. The ceremonial laws are things we did in Jewish worship, you know, like the sacrifices in the temple, those kind of things. And the civil laws were something, well, we're going to actually have a state. We'll live in the Holy Land, and therefore there are certain rules of what do you do if somebody, how do you particularly deal with manslaughter? You know, how do you handle the case? And saying those are specific about living in the Holy Land. You know, this is specific to that one particular society. So we might say this is that within the commandments, we would say that the moral commandments, which would be the mishpatim, you know, the rules or judgments, apply to Christians.
Right, right.
This is interesting, by the way. We had recently in one of our episodes, we talked about Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the classic things that happened here is it was the Christian belief that the Ten Commandments were mishpatim. They're basically, that's why they're still binding on Christians, they're moral law. Their basic moral law. And on that basis, but the question became, well, they have nothing to do uniquely with the Jewish people. Well, then how do we understand the commandment for Sabbath observance, which is very specific to Jewish practice? And that's where you got the idea of some people saying, well, the mishpat there, the real moral command, was not the specifics of Sabbath observance, but the idea of taking a day of rest and devoting it to God, and that we simply as Christians moved it to a different day.
Okay.
But that's where that came from, that idea. Well, so this is helpful. So we have the ordinances where you know, which tend to and the testimonies are things that are basically special or ceremonial law that apply to the Jewish or also for when we live in the land as a people. You know, how do we deal with basic legal cases that will come before us? It's sort of interesting. The Jews have a special rule, if you're not aware of this in Orthodox Judaism, that certain laws only apply in the land of Israel.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it makes sense because some of the laws apply climatic conditions and things that wouldn't apply if you live in Europe.
Yeah.
It's a different climate. So, you know, they have that idea that, you know, some things, well, it depends on, you know, the application even among Jews. Not all the commandments are equally applicable. Some are applicable in the land.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some civil commandments which are not applicable in other lands.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well, I mean, if you know any lawyers or you've read any legal stuff, you can see how these things can get, you know, complicated, circumstantial. So it seems the Bible is no exception.
Well, one of the reasons we call them judgments, you know, or rules, is in practicality at all, when we look at right after the Ten Commandments, what we have is a whole list of very specific rules. And it might help people to understand what's the situation where that comes up. Jethro, you know, Moses' father-in-law, the the reverse Laban. Laban was the world's worst father-in-law. Jethro was the world's best father.
Oh, yeah. He was very, very good advice, administratively gifted. Yeah.
And he was saying to Moses, said, you know, you just can't have people waiting here all day. You know, it's too much on you and it's too much on them. People can't just be waiting around all day. It's like the Department of Transportation or something, you know.
Yeah.
You just can't have people spending hours in line waiting. So he said, why don't we have choose 70? Not to confuse later on when we get the 70, you know, the spirit falls on them. This is in Exodus.
Right.
Why don't you choose 70? What they can do is take the regular case law. Mm-hmm. And so we have a list of here are the cases. If anything you have that falls into one of these categories, we'll just apply the category.
Right, right.
If something doesn't apply to these, that's when you go back to Moses.
It's like the help center online. It's like, you know,
yes.
Did any of these, are any of these standard issues your issue, you know? If not, please press zero, you know?
Exactly right. You know, okay, right. We have a real person. That's exactly what was being done with Moses. So the Mishpatim were clearly the case law, we call customary law as well. Yeah. Here's what people have always done in this situation. God says, here's what you do, which would be, it would take as customary law.
Well, okay, you know, that's all very interesting. But, you know, obviously we as Christians are not under the entire law. Obviously the judgments, the rules, the commandments, the Mishpatim you're talking about, obviously we are. So why is it important then, beyond just kind of literary mastery, to be able to understand the distinctions between these different, you know, very Jewish and in some cases very historic terms for different kinds of laws?
Well, I think it's helpful to understand some things that still apply to us. For example, first of all, there's a notion of law. The very fact it's a generic term, it's not just individual laws, but those laws are indicative. They're sacramental signs of something much deeper. That is, the world is created in order. There is an order to the world. It's not a construct. There is a moral order to the world. That's Torah. You know, in the sense of that's, you know, we call it wisdom. Remember, you know, the chokhmah in Hebrew has the idea that when we understand, we guide our lives, like the Greeks would think of the word of prudence. When we live our lives in a way that makes sense with reason, it's prudence. You know, we that's prudence. Well, we might say, you know, the underlying thing is the actual law of God. That's why we praise the law so much in Psalm 119. Lord, your law is my delight. It's exemplary of the fact that of all the individual things are part of something much bigger, that nothing is left to chance in God's universe. There's an underlying order. That's Torah, law. Okay, or, you know, and someone who does that is wise. Someone who follows that is wise. Commandments show that it's not just a general thing. You know, this comes down to some very specific things. Commandments involve, there are certain specific life things that we need to do, that this translates into action. It's not just theoretical. You know, the God's law translates into things that we automatically do because God's law. The commandments, God, something was spelled out. This, here's what I mean by that. You shall not kill. You know, this is what, lest there be any doubt about this, this is what that means. The God, to show his special sign to us, a sign of covenant, does things that are unique to us, like we have family customs and things. Well, we have two types. We have ordinances, which are basically, you know, like, how do you set up your Christmas tree? How do you celebrate Christmas in the family? That kind of thing. He, you know, gave us, you know, ordinances and testimonies in the sense of, here are things with testimonies. We can clearly see the lessons God is giving us. Those are visible in things. Or other things, it just reminds us that, in a sense, that our obeying God's law is not subject to our being able to justify it. That's an important part. I mean, for example, in Thomas Aquinas, there's a part I love when he's talking about, you know, he tries to say by natural law, we can see why God, sort of the whole idea of Mishpatim, natural law type of thing. We can see under that basis why God commands certain things. And when he's talking about why is fornication prohibited, he talks about the need to create a thing because of children, the need to create a situation where children will have the proper upbringing, there'll be a home, that kind of thing. And, you know, we need the stability that involves all, and just trying to explain in human terms. But finally, when it comes down, if we could create a situation where we knew for a fact that somebody would, in fact, stay together, raise the child properly, would it still be wrong? And he said, yeah, because God said so. You know, why we're saying we can help, our human reason can help understand to some degree, but it's not conditional upon our understanding. God's law doesn't depend on our ability to understand, you know, why he does something. So it's sort of helpful to have certain things. We just know this because God, we trust God. God said, do this, and we do it because God said to do it if it's a moral commandment. We don't have to come up with some social bad thing about our various, there are different reasons we can come across, for example, with the traditional reasons of, with incest, you know, degrees of incest. We tend to explain it in modern terms. It's just an explanation based on genetics. You know, that's not actually the real reason. That's a very modern explanation. The traditional societies, we have to have a place where people aren't hitting on each other.
Seriously.
That's really the idea. We have to have, the home has to be a safe place. That's really that's why the role is often applied to people who had no genetic connection.
Yeah.
For example, if you had an adopted brother, there's no connection, but brother and sister are still brother and sister.
So that's a testimony, an idda that people would really seem to intuitively understand, at least one hopes.
You don't want to start going to family reunions to find dates.
Seriously, yeah. You need a space free from all that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So it's helpful to know, so again, that there is a law, there's an underlying moral order of God, that really takes concrete form. You know, there are commandments, there are actually, it's not just a theoretical thing that we might find it. No, it really affects our conduct in very direct ways. Some of those, we don't know why, but we trust God when it comes to moral things. We trust God that morally speaking, you have drawn this line. We don't have to find the reason why. We know we can trust you with this. Our obedience doesn't depend on our knowledge or our explanation. A testimony is a lot of things. It's obvious why we're better off. You know, that would be the argument with Thomas Aquinas, the kind of thing. It's obvious to us. One of the things your father is a professional in psychology, Alex. And I know the fact, I'm sure he would tell us, that there's no question in the psychological literature that the best situation for a child to be raised in with the biological parents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's
no
just not even an issue.
Whatsoever.
No question whatsoever. So we could say, hey, you know, that's a very good thing. We can show you why this makes perfect sense. But that's not why we do it. God has told us the right way. The fact that we can find things that back that up are good. And that finally, again, there's an underlying principle that applies to everybody. And this can be important, too, because sometimes we say we don't want to impose our personal views on people, we're saying certain things are just are a matter of, they're just wrong. This is not a matter of a societal contract. They're by universal law, and we as Christians have to do what we can to make sure these laws are, we can't put up with euthanasia type of thing. We can't have killings to get rid of quote useless people.
Right.
No matter how much society can come to that point, because we already in the abortion debates have come to the thing, well, what really makes life valuable is reaching certain standards of usefulness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a dangerous place. We say, no. So we can say, I think the idea of mishpatim and things is certain things have nothing to do with our imposing our views. This is the natural order of the Noahic covenant on all human beings.
Right.
And we have to do our best to be, that's law, that we ought to make sure that that's enforced. That's just not a matter of, gee, it'd be sort of nice.
Right. Yeah. And
it's sort of like the Romans, for example. They were pagans, but they did not allow human sacrifice.
Right.
Wherever
absolutely.
They went, they're simply when the Brits went into the Raj, they would not allow the tradition of what was it? Hari, which is the women would throw themselves on the funeral pyre.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
They said, no, we can't allow that. It's not a matter of having different customs.
Yeah.
We can't be in a situation where women are compelled to do this.
Right.
We cannot be here in charge and allow that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's certain, you know, the judgments and rules, these are things that, you know, the reason that we follow all of these things is because God said so. But with those, you know, especially with those judgments and rules, these are things that really ought to be obvious to everyone. And that really makes society work, makes the world go around. And it's enough to appeal to that.
It's not exactly the same, but it's sort of the same neighborhood as natural law. The idea there are certain things that, and again, we believe that in the Bible, the Jews have always believed there was a law applicable to all human beings. You see, Jews don't think there's anything wrong. Sometimes Christians understand there's nothing wrong with eating pork. It's wrong for Jews to eat pork. Why? There's nothing, when you and I were single men, there was nothing wrong for us dating or, looking other as people of other, flirting. There's nothing wrong with flirting when you're out on the dating market, you know, saying, hey, that'd be interesting. However, when you're married, so they're saying we're in covenant with God. And so there's certain things because of our covenant with God are unique to us. There's no shock that you don't do this. You're not a Jew. But there are other things that it doesn't matter whether you're not a Jew. We don't kill people. We don't sacrifice children. That's why the horrors in the Bible. This is against the most basic laws. We don't kill our parents. This is not a matter of a societal construct. This is not a matter of Jewish law. This is a matter of God's universal law.
Well, thanks so much, Father Stephen. Anything else you'd have for us on these different terms about law?
Once we understand the law is this beautiful natural order, which is, you know, logos, Christ is the word. The word is the Greek version of dealing with the same thing, chokmah, the idea of this divine order. Lord, how I love your law. Not in a sense of a bunch of burdens, but basically, I love the fact you made the world in order and you've shown us a way that we can live in harmony with your will.
Well, thank you so much, Father Stephen, and thank you for listening to Word and Table. We'll be back again next week for more on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship. Thanks for listening.